And good morning to Sterling Mayor Skip Lee, joining us on phone in studio, City Manager Scott Schumard.
Good morning. Are we having fun yet?
Oh, of course. Yeah, we've got some nice air conditioning going on here in the studios, and I suspect you have yours on as well.
Yes, spreading the COVID virus all through the house.
Oh, boy. Oh, I doubt that. So, the mayor joining us on phone, he's got some duties you're taking care of today.
Yes.
Grandkids.
Yep, I'm playing grandpa today.
There we go.
That meant I couldn't be in studio with you, which is too bad, because I very much enjoy being there with you.
Oh,
keeping you out of trouble, pure as the driven snow as I am.
There we go. Hey, it was good to see you a couple of Saturdays ago, the Saturday before the 4th of July out at the Pavilion. That was my first time down there. What a fantastic outlet that is.
Oh, that farmer's market, that new pavilion is fantastic. And you have the man sitting in studio with you who is responsible for it. You know, Scott was the one who came up with the idea and followed through with the grants and got it done. I don't want his head to get big, but that's Scott's baby, and he did a really great job, he and all of his partners. Yeah. It was very nice meeting your wife, Tom. I enjoyed meeting her. Now I know who the poor woman is who has to put up with you.
Yes, you did keep expressing your condolences, so, and I'm sure she appreciated that.
Well, you know, not every wife can have the perfect husband like me.
No, Scott, yeah, the wife and I went out to the pavilion, and it was busy. And there was a long line at the cinnamon rolls. Oh, my gosh.
I've heard stories, legendary stories about those cinnamon rolls, and I just, unfortunately, I'm not a morning person. I have a hard time on Saturday mornings getting down there myself.
The line was unbelievable. In fact, after you left, Tom, I came back, and the line was still, half hour long. That day, I didn't get any cinnamon rolls.
So you didn't exercise any sort of mayoral preference and get to the front of the line or anything?
No. I didn't even cut in line when I was teaching for lunch. That's something I've never done.
Well, Mr. Schumer just came back from a nice little trip. That sounds like that was interesting and educational both.
It was the first time in all my years here I have not been plugged into the internet or the phone for a period of over a week. And so now that I'm back, I started on Thursday and to yesterday going through piles of emails for the last week and a half. So if you haven't heard back from me, it's not that I was ignoring you. It was purposely incommunicado in somewhere in the midst of the Badlands or the Black Hills over the last week and a half, just trying to decompress and recharge the old batteries.
I guess I was disconnected too. I didn't go anywhere, but I was not here last week, so it's good to be back.
It would have been nice if you guys could have held the weather a little longer for me, though. This is slightly oppressive.
It's getting there. Hey, that kind of got brought up last night where I saw a mention of concern over perhaps some pavement or street buckling.
Yeah, IDOT issued a press release yesterday about being extra careful on the roads. It had nothing to do with cell phones or speeding. It was all about buckling pavement. And when it's as hot and humid out there, there's a propensity for that to happen on the highways. And so you don't want to hit that at high speed. And locally around here, Route 2 seems to be a hot spot for that. So we've had that, I don't know if it was last year or maybe 2 years ago, but we had a good section buckle near Kmart, for instance. So it's just one of those things where it's not wholly unexpected if you come across a piece of pavement this time of year that's buckled upward or inward to hit that, and you want to be just a little extra vigilant when you're driving out there.
So there is a history of that happening, or is
here? I'm going to say it's not quite every year, but every few years. I think it's been a couple of years since this last happened, but it'll happen. And it's when it buckles on Route 2, it'll heave a couple of inches, if not more. So it's something you don't want to hit unexpectedly or when you're not paying attention, for sure.
And Mr. Mayor, you had a few entries into the. You still did the Zoom meeting last night again.
Yes. So I'm looking forward to the day that we can actually be back face to face. But the meeting went well, and the state has now codified our ability to have remote meetings in times like this. Oddly enough, the one change to the law that they made that was interesting is that up until now, everybody could be remote. Now, according to the law, either Scott or I have to actually physically be in City Hall during the Zoom meeting. And, that was a rather interesting change to the law. But, you know, it makes sense. In these days where, you know, we need to be careful. I mean, look around us in the country, and we're seeing the cases go up dramatically because people are getting out and they're more mobile. The Zoom meetings make all kinds of sense. One misses the nuances in a Zoom meeting. It's harder to communicate because you can't just kind of break in, if you will. But it's a great tool to have, and we're glad to do it. And the public will still have access. And, in fact, by this new law, we have to record the city council meeting. So I'm guessing that could be FOIA'd. So anyway, so we're still going to maintain our transparency so that citizens can have access, but try and keep everybody safe.
And I think to our credit, the mayor's been at every meeting except for one in person, and same with myself. I'm usually at City Hall trying to run the meeting from there just in case something goes wrong. Mm-hmm. And we've always set up except for the one exception of a special meeting to review the grants, we've had the city council chambers have been open. We broadcast a Zoom meeting within the chamber, so in case somebody is not comfortable downloading, logging in with Zoom, or calling in, because you can still call in, too. There's a call-in number, actually, so you can listen to the meeting. If you're not comfortable doing those things, we have always, except for that one time, had the council chambers available for people to come down to and view it from there, participate from there. We've got a microphone in the council chambers. And then we do, in the Zoom program we use, since we did pay for a little bit upgraded version, all of our meetings are recorded and we've got those downloaded. So it won't be, the new law added some things that we were required to do, but we were already doing them, so it'll be a seamless transition for us.
Okay, you do have some sort of a city recorder. Like, let's say it's just normal for all of this, and everybody's, you know, at their positions at a city council meeting. It was recorded, but written probably.
Previously it would have been in minutes. Obviously, they get approved by the council at the next meeting. But now there has to be a recording of it. So that's something. Again, it's already automatically done for us, and we've got that done through all of our public meetings through the Zoom process. So it's, again, it should be seamless, and I don't have any disagreements. I think it's a good thing, and as the mayor points out, anything we can do to be transparent. That's why I always stay there to run the meeting from the chambers when I could, because or at least from the city hall, just because of the nuances, the microphones and feedback and different things. I was usually in my office, but the chambers were always available and the front doors open for those meetings. And it's just weird times, but you still want to try and do your best effort to try and maintain, as Mayor pointed out, transparency and openness, and that's what we've always been about. So,
any idea on how long it has to continue that way, or is that just going along with Phase 4?
I think it's the Phase 4. Unfortunately, it's, you know, Phase 5 is either the vaccine or herd immunity, and who knows when that's going to come. And for us, we could space probably each other maybe every other seat and get that 6-foot distance that we need to have, but that's going to push people from the front desk out into the audience section and then spacing out in the audience, and it's really not going to leave a whole lot of space. And as the mayor points out, it's that you can't get those non-visual, or you can't get those visual cues from, like, you know, who's going to speak next, who's got that look in their face that they're going to say something. You miss a little bit of that because it's hard to kind of pan around through all the headshots that are a little bit smaller and or recognizing that raised hand in the background. But it's just such a challenge to try and do everything that you need to do in those confined spaces, and whether and you don't want to jeopardize anybody. And I think the more information we find out, it is, as the mayor pointed out, as air conditioners at home spreading it around, is it's these indoor situations where you're recycling the same air and people are speaking aloud like we are now.
You're like 10 feet away.
Closer, yeah. Oh. But it's but that's just the challenge. Yeah,
Right.
But that's just the challenge. You know, it's I think we're finding out that being outdoors, so, you know, the basketball hoops being back up and people going outside, we want people outdoors, and between the sunlight and non-recirculating air outdoors, go outdoors, enjoy life, take advantage of it. Be smart when you go indoors. And for us, I mean, I think being smart still is allowing some people to come in. If you want to come in, great, if you feel comfortable. But if you're not comfortable coming in, and we don't want you to be uncomfortable, and I certainly, last thing I want to do is expose somebody. And Mayor knows this. This is, I think, is our as great a city council as we've ever had. And I don't want to lose anybody necessarily and find out somebody was unintentionally infected and then, you know, somebody's hospitalized or even worse. And I still don't want to think about that. And I want people to be comfortable and still be able to do what we need to do. And I think we're still accomplishing that. We've got a lot of good things going on, which I'm sure as you asked the mayor about the council meeting last night, you'll hear that there's a lot of projects still going forward, and we want to be able to keep moving forward without having distractions and doing what we can with adapting and overcoming.
You know, we're still facing some technological issues. For some reason, last night, we kept losing one of our aldermen, and I was having technological issues. So it's not perfect, but we're getting better. And Scott is so right. You know, the transparency is probably more important today from a political standpoint than any time in our recent history. Because, you know, I still read it on Facebook, you know, that, you know, some sort of backroom deals. No, there are no backroom deals. In fact, the story I like to tell is right after I was mayor, I got a letter from a gentleman who was really upset with me, and it had to do with the fire department. He said, well, those union people are just sending you checks, and that's why you're backing them. So I called up the union president. I said, hey, am I missing something? But, you know, there's that perception sometimes that, you know, backroom stuff is going on, and that's why transparency is so, so important. And the more politicized and the more divided we seem to become in this country, the more important that transparency is. And I would challenge anyone to find a place more transparent than Sterling City government.
And a question for maybe this isn't a trick question. Is there any requirements that any city employees be tested, or have they, or is that still in the works here?
We've had a couple tested when we've had suspicions of interactions. So it's mainly been in the police and fire.
Okay.
The lobby's still closed. We're open by appointment for people to come in. So we're trying to reduce the possibilities for transmission that way. And our city employees are people too, and we've got, you know, some people have a high level of concern of catching, and some people have a more blasé attitude towards it, but we're trying to meet internally what everybody else is trying to meet out on the outside too. So call, please, email us, whatever it takes. But we'll meet with you if it's necessary to meet in person. We'll do it by appointment, and we've done that. We'll continue to do that. It's just whatever we can to reduce the odds and still provide the service that we can do.
See, it's one of those cases where I would look at the mayor and go, oh, he's got something to say, but...
Right, exactly, yeah. No, I think...
I've always got something to say.
Yeah, we've changed how, just little things, how the fire department responds. So the fire department helps out the ambulance service. So when the ambulance service shows up for a call, and depending on the code that goes out, if the ambulance is going out for a broken arm, the fire department's not called out automatically with them. If it's a lift situation where it's a larger person, or if it's a situation where it's like a heart attack, then the fire department's there to help assist. So, you know, the fire department shows up, and then they end up driving the ambulance. That way, both the paramedics can be in the back working with the patient, or again, in a lift situation. But before, the whole crew would go in, right, help out, be ready to assist. Now, one person puts on the protective equipment, goes in, and then if they're not needed, back out and try to just minimize the amount of contact possible. So it's small things, but there's still a service to provide, and I think everybody understands that between our police and fire, when they're showing up, they get called. They don't get to, they don't have the option of not responding. Some of these larger communities, I think you're seeing that happening, unfortunately. But here, I think we're a little bit better as a community, and we've got, you know, again, when the 911 call comes in, they're going to respond. They're going to do the best they can, and we've had, you know, it's a scary situation for them. It's easy for us to sit in the office and close the front doors and do appointment only type things, but it's those guys and gals on the front lines there. They're stuck, and we've had some scares for sure, but we've dodged most of the bullets.
Boy, if you know, if nobody's needed their services or haven't seen how they have to do this, they might not realize all the adaptions they've had to apply now.
Yeah, we've been fortunate. Most of we've had to change the personal protective equipment, but there's regional sources that have brought stuff to the table for us. So we're not too far out of pocket as far as anything that's changed so far. It's just more of some protocols for us.
And Mr. Mayor, I know we kind of took over on you there.
Well, that's okay. That's okay. I mean, Scott's exactly right. You know, he and Scott said something that I don't want to let slide by. Our employees are people, and we do care about our employees. And just as one sees the differences of opinion in the general public, we have that inside our own house. But we want to make sure our people are safe and protected, whether it's COVID or whatever hazards might exist. You know, we really do care about them. And so, you know, we take these precautions and we're very conscientious about it. So that, you know, we're hopeful. We don't want anybody to have a problem. No. Well, last night's council meeting was interesting. First thing we had a resolution honoring Gary Cook as a retiring fire chief. You know, I've had the opportunity a couple of times to talk about Gary. I first met Gary about 30 years ago when I was a young EMT with a little more hair and a little fewer pounds. And we worked with the fire department and went through a lot of training with them. And I remember Gary at that time was truly an inspiration because he worked so well with people and he was a great mentor, a great instructor. He was always calm. I don't think I've ever seen Gary rattle. And then later when I had his kids in school, I saw what kind of great parent he was. And then of course the last 10 years as chief of our joint fire command, he's done an incredible job. You know, it was, you know, everybody, I have people many times saying to me, well, why doesn't Sterling and Rock Falls do more things together? And it's more than just merging a governmental unit paperwork wise. Many times there are different cultures, different ways of looking at the world, and not wrong, but just different. And so when we came up with the idea of the Joint Fire Command, we had to have someone leading that who had credibility on both sides, who had the kind of personality to listen and not get rattled, to not have the kind of ego that would get him into a battle of wills. And Gary Cook was exactly that person. He had the street creds. His competency was absolutely unquestionable. And so for the past 10 years, we have provided, I'm going to say, the best fire department service that probably in the history of the two towns. We have standardized procedures. We have standardized training. You know, all these kinds of things that big, big hole. And whomever fills those boots is going to have big shoes to fill. It's like I told people, I said, it's kind of like, give me the name of the coach who followed Bear Bryant. And most people can't do it because they were, you know, he was so overshadowed by Coach Bryant. Well, that's going to be the thing here. You know, whoever comes into that job is going to have to really work to establish themselves to have the kind of credibility that Gary Cook had. So we honored him, and moving to Arizona. He's going to be assuming the job of Chief Grandpa, which is a fantastic job. You know, getting old isn't necessarily one's goal in life, but, you know, being a grandpa is one of the things that makes that getting older a little bit more fun. So we're going to miss Gary Cook.
How is the next selection made?
So actually, when we did the agreement with Rock Falls for the Twin City, the Joint Twin City Fire Command, the agreement called for the selection of the chief to be assisted by the Illinois Fire Chiefs Association. So we have a proposal from them. They'll come in and do an unbiased, objective search for us and then provide us with a list of final candidates. So they'll go through, they're going to come down, meet with us, find out what we're looking for, both on the Rock Falls side and Sterling side, have some interviews with the employees as well to find out what they would like to see in the next chief. Then they go out, market the position, and then they actually do they do the resume reviews, and then they do what they call assessment centers. And so they'll take the final candidates and run them through various scenarios and kind of weed out what may not be the best candidates, and then present a final slate to the two cities for us to consider and agree upon.
Well, here in the police department, you have a date coming up, July 30th, for Chief Morgan. How's that?
Yeah, that was we just got done with the city clerk replacement. Fire chief is next, and then right behind that on the tails will be the police chief. So, and of course, and Rock Falls is going through the police chief thing too, a little bit later than us. But it's amazing the turnover. It just always seems to come in waves. Mm. I think we had this happen shortly after the Great Recession too. We had a wave of people in different departments go and. It just seems to, you hire in waves and you seem to lose them in waves. And, that's the bad part too. And I can't blame somebody on the policing side for wanting to get out now. And it's not related to these two issues, but it's becoming more difficult to replace these people because it's a horrible, I mean, it's not a position that's looked kindly upon these days as it used to be. It used to be a respected, revered position in a community, and now it's become not. And it's harder and harder to recruit people. And I think we've talked about this before, is where we used to have an open recruitment and have people come down to the Coliseum back when the auditorium was in there, and we'd fill up the auditorium, it seemed like. But you'd get 50, 60, 70 people interested in being a police officer, and now we're, and you try to winnow it down to 10, and now we're starting with 10, and trying to keep 10 people interested and continuing on, and it's become a challenge, and we've asked these people to do so much, but I don't know if I've gone off on a tangent, but that is going to be the difficult part, is continuing to recruit people into these departments and having good people ready to come up. And I think we've got deputy chiefs in place that are qualified and good people, and so I think we'll be able to look internally. We'll do a search on that one as well and post it and come forward. But I think the good part is we'll be able to look internally and likely be able to make a choice internally as well.
You know, the unfortunate thing is that people see all the negativity that comes out about police work, and when young people are looking for a career, what they don't understand is that. That stuff is on the news because it is news, because it is unusual. You know, the cop who goes on his or her beat and does the service that so many of us are familiar with doesn't make the news. And so sometimes I think young people look at that and go, oh, my God, what a horrible career to get into. And the reality is that it's a great career to get into. It's an essential public service. And I would tell any young person, you come up to Sterling Fire Department and Sterling Police Department and look and see how those folks work and how being a department full of competent people actually is a joy. And they might be a little more willing to consider police work as a career. You know, it's just that, you know, the bad news, you know, the bad teacher, the bad mayor, the bad city manager, the bad cop, you know, they get the publicity, when in reality, 99.9% of them are doing wonderful work. So I would encourage, you know, for those people who are listening who have kids and grandkids who are looking for a career, consider the police and fire service, because it's also hard to find firemen, oddly enough. You know, I remember a couple of years ago, Quad Cities was having a heck of a time, and we, you know, had that challenge on and off. So, you know, that kind of public service is something we need, and it's a great career.
You know, we were talking about hopefully, no difficulty in getting police and you know, the chief. But I think the appreciation of the small community in here in the Whiteside County area, I don't think we're seeing any of the events that are occurring in other places, which is good, and I think it's going to stay that way.
I think the mayor would attest to this too. I think when you've got that smaller community, more people know each other. That familiarity breeds, breeds more familiarity, I guess. It's not us and them as much. And I think that helps out a lot. And obviously we're seeing a lot of the bigger cities from 100,000 on up that are seeing these issues, and you're just naturally more disconnected that way. And I think that feeds into some of the narrative that's going on. But as the mayor notes, you're cherry picking cases, and while it is a great career, it's nobody else is under a microscope like a police officer is, and so it's easy to find. I think it's a good thing. I mean, these people need to be weeded out. There's no place in the police service for these people who have been caught. But unfortunately, like everything else, sometimes some of these videos are very evident that this never should have happened. Other videos are conveniently edited so that you miss what led up to what happened down the line, and that's unfair to an officer too. But nobody else, you or I, the mayor, nobody else has got, you know, every time they get called out to do something on their job, nobody else has a camera on them 24/7, and it's a difficult way. And so when you do find these issues and you realize that the cell phones are so prevalent, cameras are so prevalent, that it's easy to catch these bad things, and you see what you see, and again, there's no excuse, no justification for them. But when you see how few it is relative to everything else that goes on, and I've told other people, like my daughter, for whatever reason, she was infatuated a lot with Live PD when it was on, but they canceled it in response. And when you watch that show, you see what they deal with day in and day out. And sometimes, our officers are the same way. When I've done ride-alongs in the past, you deal with the same individuals day in and day. You're not running it. Yes, we've all been, I won't say all, but many of us have been caught for speeding or whatever else we shouldn't have been doing, and that's our lone interaction. But and we know an officer from that, a lot of the general public knows an officer from that little limited interaction. But these guys and gals are out there, and they're dealing with the same people. And everybody wants to talk about the court system being broken, and I think no matter where you are in the spectrum, you're going to agree that there's something wrong with it. But the same people are going in, coming back out, and somebody, an officer arrested 2 weeks ago, they're dealing with again on the next Friday night on a call. And it's just this, it's a circular system. And they get, why wouldn't you get burnout as a police officer dealing with the same person? You're going to have some frustrations, and you're human. And asking somebody making 50 grand a year to be human, to be psychologist, to be sociologist, to be doctor, pharmacist. These guys are, my dad was a police officer, and so I have my own little bias, I know, but my dad doesn't carry the tools that they carry today. And then what my dad was carrying back then, slightly more assaultive type gear right. Versus now, all of our guys are carrying, and gals are carrying, you know, Narcan packs with them. And the de-escalation training that happens now didn't happen 30 years ago. And things have changed a whole lot in the career. And while it's still a great career, it's there's got to be latitude and understanding on both sides, and understanding where the people we're helping are coming from, and understanding where the officers are coming from. And the pendulum swings, and I think it's certainly swung towards understanding where the victims are coming from. And we've kind of forgotten where that human, the police officer, is coming from as well.
Mr. Mayor, still with us?
I'm still with you. Yeah, Scott. You know, Scott is right, but it still is a great career. I mean, everybody who works with the people has seen their job change over the last 30 years. there are things that good friends of mine did as teachers in 1972 that, and everybody said, yeah. But now that, you know, they find themselves looking for a new career. So, you know, it's, but we do need to be understanding. But it's, you know, but we're going to, I'm excited for the chief to have his opportunity to go into the next chapter of his life. And I'm confident we're going to find somebody in that same mold who will do well. You know, that, again, we've been lucky. Maybe a lot lucky, maybe we picked just the right people. But, you know, Tim Morgan is in the same vein as Gary Cook. Tim has incredible street creds with the public, with the police officers, with city administrators. He's got the same understanding of how important the community is. I mean, he's done phenomenal things, and his shoes are going to be huge to fill. You know, it's you know, it's amazing that we lose people all in this one wave, but you know, the city will continue on and continue to do well. So I'm excited about that. Last night we also appointed a member to the band commission. You know, people don't look at our commissions and often think, well, they're not sexy, you know, to serve on. I mean, a plumbing appeal committee type of thing, but they're so important to what we do. And the band commission is a great example of that. I think one of the things we're missing this summer is that wonderful cultural experience that our municipal band has brought to Grandin every Wednesday night. And because of COVID, we've been unable to do that. But we've got five commissioners on that commission. Two know a lot about music and musicianship. Two of them are very much into, you know, how to run a business, how to run meetings, how to run a commission. And then the fifth person is always, you know, I've wanted that person to be the one who represents Joe Sixpack, who's sitting out in the seats, and to make sure that it's relevant to our citizens what we're doing. You know, there was a time that some of the band administration felt that the band existed for the band's sake and forgot that, no, they existed for the citizens. And so we were very happy to appoint last night Tony Crisp to that position. He's replacing Alex Signeri, who went back to graduate school. Tony is an administrator at Bi-County, so he understands the importance of accountability for tax dollars and keeping an eye on the budget. On the other hand, he's a musician and his children are musicians, so he has an understanding of that world. So I am very much looking forward to his joining the band commission, and I'm looking forward to the day that we can have our band concerts back in person. They are doing the virtual concerts, and that, you know, that's a good thing. But so, yeah, that was good last night. And, of course, and Scott will speak to this, you know, we approved a whole bunch of stuff last night dealing with infrastructure. You know, the roundabout is going to be done this fall, or, you know, later this summer. The streets, you know, you look at Johnson Avenue, people say, well, why Johnson Avenue? You know, it's just a little street off the side. But, you know, that's one of our most used streets with school activities, and when people come from out of town and they end up parking there because they don't know the ins and outs we do for parking, and that street really did not look good and did not function well for those citizens. And just because it's a little street doesn't mean those people aren't entitled to curb and gutter and storm water management any more than somebody who lives on Avenue G. So we have a number of things. And Scott, why don't you speak to what we're doing with public works and infrastructure?
Well, we just let out a couple more contracts. So Johnson was completed from Lefevre down to 14th this spring. And the contract that we just let last night, or just not let, actually awarded last night, will continue Johnson from 14th to 12th. And so that includes us putting a storm sewer, curb, sidewalk, and things that didn't exist in most of that area before. We've also let out 6th Avenue. I think 6th Avenue was let, or 6th Avenue was awarded last night as well, and that'll do. Last year we did 6th to 11th, and this will take us from 11th all the way to Lefevre this year. We've got on the drawing board, Brink Circle is torn up right now. That's actually an Illinois American Water project right south of the post office. So if you've been inconvenienced in your trip to the post office, that's for water main replacement. But as long as they have it torn up, we're working with Wendler Engineering to get that completely rebuilt by this fall as well. So we'll have that taken care of. There is a water company that's also, just as you know, there's a 4th Street just west of Broadway. They'll be closing down a lane to do a water main replacement there. But we're still finishing that up. So Dillon Avenue just finished. We've got probably our second to last payment was issued last night for that. Mainly just waiting on landscaping to be done. So Dillon Avenue over the course of 3 years will have been done from Lefevre all the way down to 4th Street. And that included construction of a whole new retention basin as well at the corner of Dillon and 9th Street. So it's been that was a huge project. That was over $1 million project. Johnson's going to be close to $500,000 by the time you get the whole stretch done. We've got 6th Avenue. I forget what the exact amount was on that one, but we've got that awarded last night. And again, as the mayor pointed out, the roundabout, we've had some utility relocates that have been taking some time this year on us. And I think we've got the water company got their line moved, and now we're waiting on iFiber. And they're supposed to be moving theirs, I think, on Wednesday. So there'll be a little bit more activity going on out that way. We've got the detention basin is all but wrapped up behind Northland Mall. So we've got that project waiting to be finished. We're just waiting on these. There's a fountain similar to the one at Thomas Park will be going into the basin down there just to keep the algae at bay. And that'll kind of spruce it up a little bit as well. So that'll be the final part of that project. And there's more projects to come. We've got our guys are rebuilding the curb and gutter on Avenue K, waiting for that to be added to a contract. So Avenue K between 3rd and 4th Street is pretty torn up there next to coming out of the steel mill area. We're working on East 25th Street. The guys, I don't know if they've moved up there yet, but they were going to. East 25th, west of 6th Avenue, that whole road settled about 3 or 4 inches in the middle. And so they're going to be tearing that out, refixing whatever needs to be done on the curb and gutter for point repairs. And then we're going to tear that out and redo that one. I'm trying to think of what off the top of my head. But, yeah, there's several more contracts yet to go out. So just because we've started, we're not necessarily finished. We've got several more blocks that we're intending to do. I think we've got Avenue I. There's a block of Avenue I that'll be done this year. And we're trying to get Avenue D next to Kilgore Park, if anybody goes there. And it's obviously a very popular park. And the area there along the east side where the tennis court parking is and some of that is in pretty terrible shape. And we're going to go back through and get that fixed up as well.
So there's a lot going on. Yeah, and we're always trying to do as much as we can. And we know that roads are important to people here in Sterling. So we're attacking it. You know, one other thing I'd like to bring up, Tom, is the fireworks display we had last Friday. Mm-hmm. We need to give JCs big gold stars for doing that. They did a fantastic job. The riverfront was a wonderful place to do it. You know, we had city employees, PD, fire, public works involved in that. But, you know, it was something the community really enjoyed. And I would really make the appeal to those people listening this morning to support the JCs financially. People sometimes forget that, you know, those fireworks aren't given away. And fireworks that are safe and quality cost a lot of money. And so people who go down and just watch it, you know, need to consider giving to the JCs to help continue that if they really like it. And that's one of those things that they have a GoFundMe page. And, you know, we can always put them in contact with the JCs. But it was a great event, and I noticed that people were socially distancing. You know, they weren't, you know, they were very cautious not to impose on each other's space. So, that was a job very well done, and I'd like to publicly thank the JCs for doing that.
Yeah, that's a $10,000 expense out of their program, and they do it all fundraising. So people, when they were wondering why is it at Westwood in the past and why do I have to pay for parking, They made the majority of their revenues on that parking, and they've done that. I've talking to some of the guys back when I was at the airport, it was the same way. They made all their money at the on the parking fees to help, not all of it, but a good majority of it on the parking to help pay for that. So that's how they do it. It's not obviously the JCs aren't personally coming out of their wallets to make sure this happens for the community. It is a combination of soliciting for donations and those parking fees to help do it. When they were at Westwood too, and they had the vendors out there, they got a there's a vendor fee, and so they got a portion of that to help pay for this. And so it was all privately donated. And this year, because they couldn't do the parking, they came to the city, and the city of Sterling was more than happy, I think, to help chip in a little bit this year, given everything kind of happening. And there were a lack of community events, and a lot of other communities were canceling out. And I think we recognized that this was a big community-wide event, and they were struggling this year like everybody else was and trying to come up with funds. And so it was a great community event. And as the mayor pointed out, without the band and without some other things going on, without the summer sports, we're missing so much community time and being out time. And I think this was a great time. And it's everything I've heard, and I think the mayor and I were talking about this, was nothing but positive feedback about the riverfront location. So hopefully they can make it work, and if people keep up the donations and they don't have to worry about the parking fees, that'll be a good thing. And it worked out for both communities, because you got to sit on the riverfront from both sides and take in the view and have a nice night out.
Before we get to 10 o'clock in Fox News, I wanted a quick comment on something that got brought up last night. What's the status on the business grants that everybody was... Yeah, it's not going to be a quick comment, I know.
No, well, it is, and it's you know, the state of Illinois needs some accountability at some point. This it frustrates me to no end. Some of the way the state has handled everything, and they as soon as they locked everything down, they said we're gonna come out and we're gonna help, and we're gonna offer these small business grants, and they put out the grant program, and it turned out to be a 30-page. Guidebook on how to even apply for the grant. And so once you get the grant applications, we sent each grant for each business. The state wasn't offering the grant. It was federal money that they made the city responsible for. So if the business didn't comply to the grant's specifications, the city was on the hook. So the state had basically no there's no skin in the game for the state, but they made it just absolutely difficult to apply for. So then we get to the application process. These businesses have to turn over financial information, make it foilable and all this stuff, and put it all out there. It's supposed to be first come, first serve, and we get in line. We, on behalf of three businesses, turn in the grant applications, and then when we send them in, we get an email back that the program has been suspended because they're going to focus on a different grant program. And it's absolutely maddening. So when people from the state sit up there and tell us that they care about local business, they care about the downstate, and this downstate business stabilization program is then shelved so they can do the Rebuild Illinois grant program, it's maddening and it's infuriating. I know you can see my face, but it pees me off that we're at this point that we're going to give all this talk, but we're not going to actually follow through with it. And it's not even their money. This is community development block grant money. It's federal money that they're putting the cities on the line for, and then they're saying, well, we're going to put this on hold.
How can they have that much control over it, though? It's federal money. How can they get so many fingers in the pie?
Because the federal money comes with strings attached to it. So they have to it has to be spent on things that meet the goals of the CDBG money program. So they have to have things in it, but they didn't have to put cities on the hook, and they didn't have to suspend the program so they can do the Rebuild Illinois. Not that Rebuild Illinois is not important, it is, but you're talking about we're going to add infrastructure projects that weren't previously planned for, budgeted for, and you're going to do that by suspending the grant program for small businesses. And I don't know. There was no date on when we could expect them to restart it or anything else. It was just a two-sentence email back, or maybe three sentences, saying that the program's suspended, and this is your state. And people wonder why people get frustrated with Illinois, and this is just another example in a long line. It just makes me mad. But I'm in here in these four walls. I can yell at all these four walls all I want, but it's not going to change Chicago's mind on how they're going to administer this program. And it's frustrating as all get out.
It's funny you point streets.
Yeah, and the money's there, Tom. That was the other frustrating thing. I mean, how much did they award, Scott?
They've awarded, as I understand it, they've awarded less than $2 million out of the $25 million that was set aside.
So there's $23 million still left in that fund, and then they decided to suspend the program. And Scott's right on the mark. You know, if we're going to help these small businesses, we need to do it. You know, a media outlet contacted me yesterday wanting to know about how we were doing economically here in Sterling. And one of the questions they asked me about was the closing of small businesses. And, you know, we have businesses all the time that are right on the edge. And COVID has knocked some of them on the bad side of the edge. And not doing programs like this hurts those businesses. So the state needs to get its act together. Scott's exactly right. It's frustrating. I mean, these people put in a lot of time on this grant application. You couldn't believe how big it was. You would have thought we were going for a multi-million dollar National Science Foundation grant when you look at the paperwork. But, you know, we will continue along. The good news is that the community here has been very supportive of businesses. And we want our businesses to succeed. And I think people have actually dug a little deeper to make sure that they buy where they can to keep those businesses going. I'm glad to see the mall has businesses reopening. And so, we'll get through this. But it'd be nice to have a little bit of help from the federal government and the state government.
Yeah, as you point out, Mayor, it's not necessarily coming in a hurry. So, again, this is a time, just like the Great Recession, too, reemphasizes that need to shop local, because that dollar you spend here is getting recirculated many more times over than if you spend that dollar in the Quad Cities or up in Rockford. So, if it costs you an extra buck to go to Grummets versus running out to Lowe's or going over to the Home Depot or whatever, do it. I mean, it's between gas, your time's valuable too, but it's also staying local. And I'm not even saying Grummets is not even competitive. That was just a horrible example, but it's an example of what you can do. Just keep it here and help out our people. And that's what makes us a great community. That's what will help us pull through in the end.
Wow. We covered a lot of ground today. A lot of ground.
Well, as long as we covered indoors in the air conditioning, I'm fine with that. It was brutal walking in here before 9 o'clock.
Well, Mr. Mayor.
I hate air conditioning, and yet if I turn it off, there's someone who lives with me whose name shall go unmentioned, but who doesn't like the heat. So you're stuck between two. But thank God we have air conditioning. Mm. I'd hate to think about having the house be 90 degrees inside.
Especially with the little ones over.
Yes. Well, it's the big one who just celebrated the 60th anniversary of her 9th birthday that would would complain more.
Well, get out the kiddie pool and the water balloons and be a target.
Hey, and I have a great time doing that. The doggone kids keep wanting to get in, though. No. You know, they push me in.
Well, Mr. Mayor, thank you so much for joining us on the phone this morning with an important update. And City Manager Scott Schumer, braving the heat to step in, and now you got to go back out in it.
Yeah, go enjoy it. I mean, it's still summer. It beats negative 30 or whatever it's been. So
this is easy to shovel.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
Amen. Yeah, we'll see you, I think, on the 21st.
Absolutely. Yep, 2 weeks.
Yep, that'll be the 60th anniversary of my 10th birthday.
There we go. I will remember that. All right.
I'll bring the donuts or whatever that morning.
Thank you so much, and enjoy the day, sir.